It's time to welcome in our Major League Baseball insider, Dan Shulman, brought to you by SML Entertainment, specializing in pool tables and hot tubs since 1956 with five Alberta locations. Go to smlentertainment.com for details. And so much now is going to be looking ahead to the future when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. But as we welcome in Dan from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, Sportsnet Blue Jays Baseball, and more, let's first take a look at the five games that we saw in the ALCS, Dan. Just your overall summation of the five games the Jays played against Cleveland.
Well, I give a lot of credit to the Cleveland Indians. I mean, without two, in effect, three of their starting pitchers, because Trevor Bauer only got two outs, I think the Indians did a great job. You know, what Merritt did in game five, going 4 1/3, what the bullpen did in the Trevor Bauer game in game three. And I think there weren't many opportunities to score for either team in the series. And I think the Indians took advantage of theirs better. They're a better offensive team than people give them credit for. They were second in the league in runs scored this year. But from a Blue Jays perspective, I thought the Indians' game plan to throw a lot of soft stuff and throw the ball away, away, away from the right-handed batters of the Blue Jays, it was a great game plan, because most of the Blue Jay hitters are right-handed power hitters who try to pull the ball almost all the time. And I don't think they adjusted very well at times to what the Indians were trying to do. I think they needed to, you know, try to go the other way a little bit more, try to settle a little bit more, not necessarily to hit the ball out of the ballpark. But that's not who they are. That's not what they get paid to do. So I think the Indians had a great game plan, executed it very well, and I think the Blue Jays weren't able or willing to make enough adjustments.
Have you ever seen in an American League or a championship series period such a patchwork job done by a team that wins a series with their pitching staff? Because, you know, Kluber goes on 3 days rest. They had the game three bullpen win. Merritt only went 4 2/3 in game five yesterday. They really did patch this thing together.
Yeah, they did. And off the top of my head, I can't remember it. And obviously they couldn't have done it without the great bullpen that they have. But it's remarkable to put out their 2, 3, and 4 starters and to find a way not only to win a series, but to win it in five games. You know, Terry Francona is great at working a bullpen. He's an outside-the-box kind of thinker. He didn't get, you know, pinned down into certain patterns. He used Miller when he needed to use Miller, whether it was fifth or seventh or eighth or whatever the case may be. He knew what a weapon he had in Andrew Miller. He knew he had a lot of good arms out of the bullpen, and I think he did a great job. You know, there's a lot less to do in an American League game than there is in a National League game in terms of changes and that sort of thing, but he was masterful. He's one of the best managers in baseball. He always has been one of the best managers in baseball, and when he had a chance to win a game, he went for it, and he said, "I'll worry about tomorrow. But again, Miller's ability to get more than three outs, to get 5, 6, 7 outs on occasion is, you know, unparalleled out of the bullpen in today's game. And that's why, you know, he's better than Chapman. He's better than any other reliever in baseball, because the stuff is as good as anybody and the stamina is better than anybody. You can pitch him over and over again. And, you know, if I'm the Dodgers or the Cubs, I'm not thinking about the Indians yet, but once somebody emerges out of this series and plays the Indians, you know, they're going to start worrying about Andrew Miller.
Well, and he wins the ALCS MVP. I know that when we previewed this series last week, you pinpointed him specifically too. When Cleveland acquired him from New York, were you expecting this much of an impact from Miller, or has this maybe even surprised you a little bit?
No, I've been a huge fan of his. I mean, it's again, not only does he have the best stuff, I think, of any reliever or right up there, but he has no ego, absolutely no ego. He's about as nice a person as I've ever met in baseball, and he says to whatever team he's been on, to whatever manager he's got, use me however you want to use me, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And nobody else says that. You know, other closers, if they come in the eighth, or if they come in with men on base, or they can't pitch 3 days in a row, there's none of that with Andrew Miller, none. And, you know, you look at his numbers during the regular season, he struck out 123, and he walked 9. The problem with Andrew Miller is just not enough people knew about him, because he bounced around from team to team and he wasn't always a closer. But this guy's been the best reliever in baseball for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, Wade Davis had 2 incredible years for Kansas City before this season when he had some injuries, and Chapman's great and Jansen's great and there are other great guys. But in my mind, it wasn't even close who the best reliever in baseball is. And I'm not saying they don't win this series without him. He definitely deserved the ALCS. But if you've just got, you know, a standard great lefty who's facing a couple of left-handed batters and that's it, you know, then Terry Francona's got problems. I mean, he was counting outs every single game I'll use this guy for four, this guy for five, this guy for four. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Miller is what allowed him to really stretch it out in a couple of games where he needed to.
So all that talk about how masterful a job Francona was with his pitchers, the game plan, and the execution from what they got from their pitching staff. So does that maybe make some of the criticism that has been pointed towards the Jays at the plate a little unwarranted, or is some of that still very valid?
I think it's 50-50. I always think too much. Everybody focuses on their own team. So if their team does well, it's look what our guys did. And if their team does poorly, mm-hmm. it's look what our guys didn't do. So, and I understand that. And the Blue Jays didn't do some things very well, I think. I think some of them worried too much about the strike zone. There's too much complaining. And again, they're paid to hit the ball over the fence. They've got almost an entirely right-hand hitting team. Righties, generally speaking, everybody pulls the ball for power. So they're going to hit the ball to left. And I think the Indians pitched them, as I said, away, away, away. They had a good game plan, and they executed it beautifully. So I think part of this is, hey, tip your cap to the Indians. They may not blow you away with Tomlin's curveball and Merritt's changeup and that kind of stuff, but they had a game plan, and they executed it perfectly. I think they deserve some credit for that. But I think the Blue Jays also deserve a little bit of blame for maybe not making adjustments as well as they could have. But that's not really who they are. They were a team, and John Gibbons has said it over and over again, and he's right, that this is who they are. They're a team built on hitting the ball over the fence. If they pop a couple of homers, they win. If they don't, they really have a tough time winning games. They're not really good at getting a bunt down, moving a runner, hit and run, that sort of thing. It's not who they are. So their offense, I think, is unfortunately was kind of destined to be a feast or famine offense. We saw it all season long. They'd score 10, then they'd score one. If they were the kind of team that just consistently could score four or five, they might still be playing baseball right now.
With Dan Shulman, our Major League Baseball insider this afternoon, the Jays announced yesterday John Gibbons will be back as manager for 2017. Your thoughts and your evaluation of the work that he's done?
I think John Gibbons is a good manager. I think sometimes he takes a little heat for things that, quite frankly, are from people who, may not be, observers of the game to the extent that they think they are. I mean, I'm not sure what he wants, what some people want him to do differently. Again, this kind of team is not built to do a lot of different kinds of things with offensively. If some guys were struggling, he changed the lineup. He moved guys up or down. Part of the problem for this team this year was for a long stretch until late when Cecil got good, they didn't have a lefty they could trust. So are you going to keep rolling righties out there against left-handed batters, or are you going to, send out your lefty and hope for the best? If you've got a great lefty, it makes things a lot easier in the bullpen for the manager. I think John Gibbons is a good manager. And listen, when you manage a team to the American League Championship Series 2 years in a row, I think you deserve to come back. I was like, say they lose the wild card game, I was wondering if he would be back, because whenever, a new regime comes in this case, Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, I'm sure, they want their own guy. It's like that in every job, in every business, in every industry. A new president comes in and he's going to want his own people. But I think John Gibbons deserves the opportunity to come back in 2017.
The big focus for many is the futures of specifically Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista. What's your handicap as to those two heading to free agency and their chances of being back with the Blue Jays next year?
I think the Blue Jays will try to get Encarnacion back. He has said he wants to come back. I think I'm just throwing numbers out there. If they offer him 2 years, $40 million, and Boston or Texas or somebody offers him 3 years and $60 million, any of us would take the three-year deal and the extra money. So I think if the Blue Jays make a competitive offer, they will get them. I know the Blue Jays, again, are concerned about having too many right-handed batters and too many older players making big money. They've already got Troy Tulowitzki. They've already got Russell Martin. Josh Donaldson is I believe, 30 now, and he's making big money next year as well, and then has another year until free agency. And they're worried, how many $20 million players in their 30s can you have? But I think they will make a sincere effort to get Encarnacion. I think it's maybe 50-50 that they bring him back. In terms of Bautista, I think the interesting thing to me is whether they make him a qualifying offer. And if they do that, and that's so if he says no, then they get a draft pick as compensation. If they do that, he might accept it. It'll be about $17 million, I believe, is the plateau for the qualifying offer. He could accept a one-year deal in order, in his mind, to maybe rebuild his value a little bit and then become a free agent again. I don't know if the Blue Jays – I think the Blue Jays are going to make him a qualifying offer, but I wonder if, you know, on both sides there's a feeling like, hey, it's been 7 years and it's time to move on. I think the first priority for the Blue Jays will be Encarnacion. I think the second will be Bautista. I mean, at some point, again, they've got to try to get younger. They've got to try to get more left-handed bats in there. But this is a hard decision. I think 50-50 Encarnacion's back and maybe 25-75 Bautista's back.
Where does Saunders fit into that?
It's a good question because he had a much better first half than second half, like much better. Again, they want more left-handed bats, and he is a left-handed bat. But by the end of the year, he was a DH for them. You know, you could see where they valued him defensively. They had him below Bautista. Bautista would be in the outfield, and Saunders would be DHing. You know, he's had some knee trouble, and he's not a young kid either. I'm not sure about Saunders. I think it depends on what else is out on the market. You know, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm looking for a left-hand hitting outfielder with speed who's a good contact hitter. I think they've got to find somebody like that, either via free agency or trade. You know, maybe he's a leadoff hitter, maybe he's not. But you just can't go into a season, in my opinion, again, with seven right-handed batters and two left-handed batters. So if they don't keep Saunders, I think they got to get a left-handed bat to replace him, and then maybe another one to replace, say, Bautista. You know, Martin's going to be there. Travis is going to be there. Tulowitzki is going to be there. Donaldson is going to be there. Pilar is going to be there. You know, a lot of right-handed bats already are going to be there. Somehow, some way, they've got to find a way to increase the number of left-handed batters they have.
One more thought on the Blue Jays, and that's maybe a larger kind of overarching question, but a lot of talk now that with Mark Shapiro going into kind of a full off season and Ross Atkins going into a full off season as the baseball operations group, you know, maybe they really start to put their stamp on the organization, because a lot of what we saw go to Game 5 of the ALCS was the group put together by the prior regime and Alex Anthopoulos. Do you see Shapiro maybe pivoting a little bit in terms of the direction this Blue Jays team goes and how he builds this team and adds to this team during the offseason?
Absolutely. I think every president and GM do that. I mean, I don't think he tears it down, but I think bit by bit, you know, and they already started doing that, I think, over the course of this season. But now in the offseason, they will. You know, they're kind of in a difficult position because two of the team's most important players, you know, historically, not just this year, are free agents right now. So I think there's no question they want to put their stamp on the team. They want to strengthen the farm system. They want to get younger. They want to have more controllable players in terms of salary. You know, maybe it's not a power team. Maybe the identity of the team is in power anymore. Maybe it becomes more of a pitching and defense team going into next year. So, you know, any group, any boss will want to put his stamp on a team.
Game 5 of the National League Championship Series goes tonight. He's Dan Shulman. He'll be on the call for the game tonight as the Dodgers play their final home game of this series. As we go into Game 5, set us up for it and kind of how it sets things up going back to Chicago.
Okay, and I'm going to have to run after this answer because, as you say, I am doing the game and I got a lot of other things that I got to get to. But, well, John Lester's on the mound for the Cubs. He's their ace. Wasn't at his best last game, but I mean, he's a terrific pitcher, and the Dodgers are going to try to mess with him. He has trouble throwing to bases, won't throw pickoff throws, that sort of thing. So I think they'll try to mess with him, stealing bases, maybe dropping some bunts down. Many have tried. Few have succeeded. But they will try. Kenta Maeda for the Dodgers, not at his best right now. Looks like maybe he's hitting a wall at the end of the year, has not pitched very deep into games at all recently. So, you know, on paper, advantage Cubs tonight. On paper, advantage Dodgers in Game 6 with Kershaw on the mound. So, maybe it sets up for a seventh and deciding game at Wrigley, which would certainly be great theater.
Dan, thanks for doing this. Have a good call tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Dan Shulman is our Major League Baseball insider from ESPN and Sportsnet Blue Jays Baseball. He's brought to you by SML Entertainment, specializing in pool tables and hot tubs since 1956 with 5 Alberta locations. Go to smlentertainment.com for details.